All right, so today I'm going to be talking about the focusing of entropy, which you might not have thought is the sort of thing that ought to focus, but it begins with this fact about GR that the area focuses. So I'll begin by talking about the focusing of area. So this is governed, suppose we have a null surface in general relativity, and I can, the null surface consists of a bunch of null generators or arrays, and we can label it with an affine coordinate v. And then we can define an expansion as the change of the infinitesimal area with respect to V per unit area. And we can also define a shear as the rate at which it deforms into an ellipsoid. It's a formula for that too, but I won't write it. Then the Wright-Jaduri equation governs the derivative of the expansion with respect to V, so it's kind of like a second derivative of the area, although there's a 1 over A in between the derivatives. And it takes the following form. Where the important thing to note is that these two terms are squares, so they're manifestly positive. This guy is the VV component of the Ricci tensor. And if we have the Einstein equation, this is the same as, this is equal to 8 pi g times the VV component of the stress tensor. And it is a common energy condition that many classical field theories satisfy that this is called the null energy condition, that this quantity is non-negative. So in theories that obey the null energy condition, all of this stuff is positive, and we end up with the conclusion that theta dot is less than or equal to 0. And this is the statement that the classical area focuses. Now, this isn't just a curiosity. It actually is a very important part of many theorems in GR that restrict the global structure of the space-time, the most famous of which is the Penrose singularity theorem. So the Penrose theorem uses this plus it uses a restriction on the that they're called global hyperbolicity on the global causal structure of space-time. That is basically what you need to say there's a well-defined initial data problem. So it has two parts, one of which says that things don't go around in closed time-like or light-like curves, and that those don't exist in space-time, and the other says basically there's no holes or boundaries that information can both come in and out of in the space-time. And with the further assumption that space is non-compact at one moment of time, it proves, and the existence of a what's called a trapped surface, it proves that there must exist singularities in the space-time defined as a null geodesic incompleteness, where this null geodesic comes to an end and the space-time can't be extended in such a way that it continues. So a trapped surface is a co-dimension 2 region in the space-time with the property that if you take the outgoing light rays that you shoot out, so now we have a co-dimension 1 null surface that comes out from it, that everywhere along the surface, at least initially, you have theta is less than 0, so that it's initially contracting. You might say, what do I mean by the outward direction? I mean the direction in which the space is non-compact. Sometimes both directions are the outward direction. And so what you can see from the Rai-Chiderio equation here is that because theta dot is less than or equal to 0, if theta is initially negative, it remains negative forever. In fact, it's continually decreasing. And because there's a theta squared in here, you can actually prove that theta has to go to minus infinity at some finite value of this affine parameter. So this says that this thing must end at a finite value for each of these parameters. Now, it can end by g of these x just leaving the null surface, but it turns out on a globally hyperbolic spacetime that can't happen everywhere, because then this null surface would be a compact region that supposedly is a sort of time slice of a non-compact spacetime. And one of the things global hyperbolicity tells you is that you can't evolve in a way that changes the topology. So there's a bunch of nuances and details I don't want to go into, but I will mention that this places many other important constraints on the space-time with a bunch of things that are proven with very similar proofs to the Penrose singularity theorem, although sometimes the details are slightly different. In particular, you can show that there's no traversable wormholes or warp drives. So that makes it difficult to have your FTL drive. And it places various restrictions on baby universes inside black holes, or what amounts to the same thing, restarting inflation. After it ends and you're in a space-time that's asymptotically Minkowski or ADS or something like that. And if you do the whole thing backwards in time, you also get an initial singularity. So this is the Big Bang singularity, perhaps, for FRW-like cosmologies. They are non-compact. There is a stronger theorem by Hawking that applies to the case of compact space-times in cosmology, but nobody much believes it anymore because it uses an energy condition, the strong energy condition that's violated during inflation. Okay, so these are some pretty important results, and we would like to generalize them or circumvent them, because the results were proven for the case of Einstein gravity. And I'd like to ask what happens when you go beyond Einstein gravity. Do similar things continue to hold, or can we then evade these things and build ourselves our warp drive or whatever, have physics before the Big Bang or whatever it is that we want to do? So, in order to address this question, I need to ask whether there's an analog of this focusing relation. And in particular, there is the uncomfortable fact that the null energy condition is typically violated by quantum field theories. So in order to get some traction, I want to bring in another topic, which may look unrelated at first, but it's the black hole entropy. So the event horizons of black holes and also related types of horizons like Rendler horizons and De Sitter horizons and a general family of things called causal horizons, which are basically defined as the boundary of the past of something at infinity, seem to obey the laws of thermodynamics if you assign to them an entropy. So the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy is equal to the area over 4g h-bar, not setting Boltzmann constant to 1. And it increases classically. That's one of the laws of thermodynamics if there's the null energy condition. That is the Hawking area increase theorem, whose proof is almost identical to that of the Penner singularity theorem in using this focusing piece, although the details are different. And it is believed that if we have a UV complete theory of quantum gravity, that this should somehow count the available quantum gravity microstates in the system, although there's a lot of controversy over exactly what we should expect it to be counting. But this is not the complete story, because this is for Einstein gravity, and there are corrections that go beyond Einstein gravity. And these corrections are of two basic types.
Before that, yes. Remind me, because NAC is typically violated in field theory, what's the the current status of the thinking of how to handle that, just via this whole principle and interest business?
There are some things called quantum inequalities or quantum interest principle that people like Ford and Roman have looked at that concern things like bounding below the integral of the stress tensor in along a time-like geodesic in field theory. These are only proven for certain field theories. The detailed bound below depends on which theory you're talking about. They're interesting, but as far as I know, they're kind of hard to use in proofs of things. The thing I have found, I don't want to bash their work or anything, I think it's neat, but the thing I have found more useful in field theory is the average null energy condition, where you integrate the null energy along an entire null geodesic. And this seems to be true if you pick, on a curved space-time, you have to make sure your geodesic is achronal, so that no two points are time-like separated. Because even on a light ray, two points can be chronal if on a curved space-time. And that seems to be enough to get a lot of these properties, but not everything. But it's kind of global, and so it's closely related to issues involving the generalized second law and so on. So the first kind of correction I want to talk about is quantum/thermal corrections. So the fundamental reason for these is conceptually not surprising, which is that even if you say the black hole has entropy, there might be other stuff in the universe like radiation or star that's outside the event horizon, and it might have entropy too, and you might want to count that if you're talking about the entropy of the total entropy of the universe. So for that, you'll want an outside entropy term that's formally defined if you have a density matrix of your quantum state outside the horizon, it's formally defined as the von Neumann entropy, although this is divergent and needs regularization, renormalization. So this...
Does it also have coarse-grained or not?
You have a choice. You can either consider the fine-grained quantity, or if you prefer, you can coarse-grain it. Like if you had a star...
You can have a pure state, but if you don't measure enough, it might as well be mixed for...
Yes, so I mean, you could say at the level of quantum field theory, you're already coarse-graining in the sense that you're ignoring anything inside the horizon, which makes the outside state mixed. This is already enough to get an interesting second law without any additional coarse-graining, so usually I don't coarse-grain anymore, but you can if you like.
I'm concerned about this, how it's kind of non-local, so it's hard to...
It is non-local. This allows you to define a quantity which is called the generalized entropy, which is the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy plus this entropy outside. And this quantity is the one that you expect to increase with time for the generalized second law of thermodynamics. Now, some examples of this, and maybe this indicates why I call it quantum as well as thermal as well as quantum corrections, the black hole can Hawking radiate, and in that case, the S out term is going to increase as time passes, even though the area is shrinking. But the S out term increases more than it needs to make up for. Similarly, you could throw something into the black hole, the S out term will decrease, but the area will increase. Yes?
So you mentioned that S out is formally divergent.
Yes.
Do you have in mind regulating it by renormalizing Newton's constant?
Yes. I'm about to mention that. Yes, this is divergent, but fortunately, the divergences are local on the horizon. So we have the option to do what we normally do in quantum field theory, which is to absorb the divergences into local counterterms, of which the simplest one is this 1 over is Newton's constant that appears in the area law, but there are subleading divergences that need to be renormalized into other integrals on the horizon. And this brings us straight to so this is divergent, needs renormalization, and this brings us to the second type of correction, which is higher curvature corrections coming from stringy physics or from counterterms. So a higher curvature term in the action, we'll want to write our gravitational action as the integral of a Lagrangian, where the Lagrangian is equal to r over 16 pi g plus some higher curvature corrections. And I'm just going to schematically write that as things that are quadratic and Riemann plus more. And I'm going to schematically put alpha as the parameter that controls this, even though obviously since there's many terms, they should all have their own coefficient.
Is there an assumption of locality here in the interactions?
Yeah, so the types of higher curvature interactions people get to deal with these counterterms or the types that come in an alpha prime expansion string theory are, of course, local Lagrangians. Then you might be able to do some of the things I'm saying, but I'd worry about it. Although these quantum corrections are already non-local corrections to the entropy. So in that sense, this is a classical piece that's better behaved.
Well, but they're all outside.
These are surface terms. So these are integrals. So these lead to corrections. These correct the black hole entropy. And the amount by which they correct them is, you have a formula that looks like the black hole entropy. So we have a piece that's due to Bob Wald. This is a d minus 2-dimensional integral. So it's a surface term on the horizon. Now I'm going to put this in a coordinate system for simplicity, where we have a set of normal null coordinates that are v and u, and then I and j are going to be the transverse directions. So there's this term that's due to Bob Wald that comes where you integrate the Lagrangian with respect to the UV component of the Riemann tensor. The Riemann tensor contracted with the binormal. And this piece is valid for, actually I'll put it over here and make this the next term a new line. So this is valid for stationary black holes. So killing horizons with no dynamics. And it's also valid for F of R gravity, where the action is just a function of the Ricci scalar. But in general, it's the wrong answer, we now know. And there are corrections that, of which the beginning looks like an integral of, is this too low for people to see? A second derivative of the Lagrangian with respect to two Riemann tensors. Times the extrinsic curvatures in the u and v directions. This is, so because it's a codimension 2 surface, the extrinsic curvature has 3 indices, 2 of which go along the surface, and 1 of which indicates the direction that it's bulging in. So that can be either u or v. And on and the way these are contracted, the ij with the u's matches up. The ij matches up with the u on both sides of the expression, and the ko matches up with the v. So that makes it easier to remember. So this correction, so plus stuff which is quartic or higher order in the extrinsic curvature, which starts coming up for cubic Riemann cube theories, which is actually still controversial. But this term is due to the work of Soloducan and Fersayev, Patrushev, and Soloducan worked this out for quadratic curvature gravity. But Shi Dong figured it out for all of F. Riemann actions. Up to some potential issues with higher terms. Joan Camps did quadratic curvature again. And also, Rongxin Miao has done some work extending this to actions that involve derivatives of the Riemann curvature, and also pointing out that there is an ambiguity in how Shi Dong worked out this expression that hasn't been resolved yet for this k to the fourth thing. How they got this was by a generalization of these Gibbons-Hawking method, where you evaluate the entropy by doing a conical deficit, like in the replica trick, only it was done in the context of holographic field theories with this Lukowitz-Maldacena method, where you where you derive the Ryutaki-Inagi formula and get an entropy proportional to area. Shidong did generalize this to the case of F of Riemann gravity and showed what the appropriate entropy functional was in this case. Now, Bob Wald's formula was valid for stationary black holes up to, but you can see that these extrinsic curvatures, if you're on a killing horizon, then everywhere on the killing horizon, either the U or the V components of the extrinsic curvature vanish. And if you're at the bifurcation surface, both of them vanish. So these terms do not matter on a stationary horizon. And in fact, they, if you look at the original Wald-Eyer paper, as well as the work of Jacobson, Kang, and Myers, these were originally ambiguities in the procedure for identifying the entropy of the black hole. Anything that's basically a product of terms that is separately boosted, they're separately boost non-invariant, but when you multiply them together, the U's and the V's balance. Anything like that was an ambiguity. But these exciting thing is that these ambiguities are beginning to be resolved, which for purposes of black hole thermodynamics is important because in general, the black hole is not stationary, and you want to know what its entropy is. To say things like the entropy increases. Now, the point is, if you are renormalizing the entropy now, there'll be one-loop corrections coming from the Feynman diagrams to the gravitational action. And if you work out the corresponding change in the entropy functional by these methods, it looks like they give you exactly the right counter terms you need with numerically correct coefficients to absorb all of the divergences in the entanglement entropy. So this is some evidence that this generalized entropy is an important quantity. Basically, the procedure of renormalizing from the UV to the IR and the procedure of going from the action to the entropy commute with each other.
I'm very confused by that, let's say. So I would have thought that the entanglement entropy outside is independent of your dynamics for the metric. That you know, you give yourself a geometry, you give yourself a boundary, you compute the entanglement entropy, and your divergences depend on the geometry of your bounding surface. You know, it can depend on the curvature, extrinsic curvature, but it shouldn't depend on any dynamical model.
It doesn't exact.
But this other term looks like it's the Lagrangian for gravity.
So, when you can, in a purely field theoretic way, you can look at these divergences, and you can identify what correction to 1 over g, so that's the area law divergence, and what is the correction to these alphas, these integrals of the curvature, would you need to renormalize this entanglement entropy? Okay, that can be calculated with a purely field theoretical way on a fixed background space-time. So the result is you could put it this way. Even if you don't make the metric a dynamical field, it's still true that you can have a term in your action which is generated by the quantum fields, which is an integral of the curvatures. That's just part of the fixed background partition function.
That then makes the metric.
It would then, if you then turn on gravity and allow the metric to fluctuate, those terms would contribute to the gravitational action, although there may also be a bare term in addition that you added when you turned on gravity. So this procedure only gives you the correction that matter makes to the gravitational action. It doesn't necessarily tell you what your bare gravitational action was to begin with.
Okay.
Although that's where this Begenstein-Hawking term came from, was the fact that we believe the dominant term constant is GR. Does that make more sense?
Yeah, and I guess that do the terms you generate this way require that you put in sort of all possible higher curvature terms? I mean, to be able to renormalize and get rid of these.
At the level of free field theory, if you don't turn on gravity, then no. In general, the process terminates. For example, in four dimensions, the 1 over g is a quadratic divergence. That's the area law divergence. And then your corrections to you get log divergences in the quadratic curvature action, which will contribute to integrals of things that have powers like 1 power of Riemann on the horizon. And then that's it. Everything else is convergent. So you'd only worry about if you were wanting to do an exact renormalization group instead of the close enough renormalization group we normally do as physicists. But if you actually turn on gravity, then of course, because gravity is a non-renormalizable theory, you'll eventually get every term at some point in the expansion. Okay, so this is the story of the generalized entropy in black hole thermodynamics. Now I want
I have a question.
Yes.
Formally, the rate of the equation hasn't changed. What has changed is how you interpret our new rate.
So I'm not going to change the definition of the Ricci tensor per se,
What I mean by that is, using Einstein's equations for getting into an energy condition, that's where the change is going to be on deciding whether something is positive or negative. It's not that the Ricci equation actually changes, right?
Yeah, okay. The Ricci equation itself, before you substitute in the Einstein equation, is a geometric tautology. So that's pure geometry. It doesn't depend on your action or anything.
So you're not renormalizing A?
Not necessarily. I mean, at a certain point, you could start wondering what happens when you make these all operators and, you know, and so on. But I'm going to go, since you're asking about how this relates to the Ricci equation, I'm going to put my generalization on this board so we get to keep the. All right, so what I want to do is try to, just like the Ricci-Dury equation is more general than the area increase theorem, it's a sort of local condition at every point, in a way that is, I want to evaluate S-gen. In general, you can do this on a non-horizon slice. There's no reason why we have to focus only on black hole horizons or on extremal surfaces in the context of holography. Now, of course, there are some constraints. We want to make sure that we're talking about a codimension 2 surface and that it lies on a Cauchy slice so that we know what we mean by the inside and the outside to evaluate the entanglement entropy.
But we might, you know, we have less evidence that the area is now contributing to the entropy if the area is just some random surface.
I agree. So the question is, can we do something interesting with this that turns out to be true?
Okay. And so you're just going to define it this way and see if you can do something.
So the research program is to try to extend classical GR results by running around and replacing all the areas with generalized entropies and seeing whether we can get something that's interesting and true and that maybe allows you to prove some of these global results I just erased. So this is a research program that is associated with my quantum singularity theorem work, with some work I've done with Netta about quantum extremal surfaces. Faulkner, Lukacs, and Maldacena had the generalized entropy pop up in their generalization of Ryutaki and Nagi to one-loop bulk corrections. Raphael Busso and Netta have also been thinking about using this to define new new types of horizons. in general relativity. So the in my quantum singularity theorem, I tried to use the GSL plus global hypervelocity plus the rest of the assumptions without the null energy condition to try to prove the something similar. Now, that required you to replace this notion of a trapped surface with a quantum trapped surface, which is defined so that instead of the area, we define a big theta as the functional derivative of the generalized entropy with respect to a coordinate v. In general, we're interested in functional derivatives because this is a codimension 2 surface. And if we have a null surface and a codimension 2 slice, we could imagine deforming it in many possible ways. So this thing is which the functional derivative could also be written as 1 over the area times the derivative of the generalized entropy evaluated just if you change it on one particular infinitesimal area element. Like if I picked a pencil of infinitesimal area A and I just evolve it forwards just along that one pencil. V labels.
The derivative.
Yeah, derivative with respect to.
Oh, and the equation that you wrote, you have delta S J.
Oh, yes. Sorry. That is wrong. Yes. It's right in my notes. Okay. But I don't want to get into this because this is a whole different talk too much. But the. Oh, do you have a question?
I do, but if you don't want to get into it too much.
Just go ahead and ask.
The areas there instead of the generalized entropy.
Oh, you mean why it's there? Yeah, so you don't want to be too unsophisticated where you replace the area. If you, it really doesn't make sense to put the 1 over generalized entropy there. Then you get it's just wrong. We're interested in the generalized entropy production per unit area. That would make it non-local in a much more pernicious way. I won't go into details, but you can explicitly show it's false. Or I guess I haven't said any, but you can explicitly, it doesn't work very well. So what we wanted to ask was, is there an analog of this focusing theorem? And so that would make this sort of ground this similarly to the role of the Reichert-Urey equation in classical GR. So we proposed the quantum focusing conjecture that if we then take another derivative with respect to V of this theta, then we propose that this is less than or equal to 0. Okay?
With no assumptions about the matter about anything?
Yeah, so in general, we want to allow there to be quantum field theory matter sources. So the null energy condition is no longer true. In fact, this will lead to a sort of a generalization of the null energy condition, which replaces it. Yes?
Let me ask a question. In the ADS-CFT correspondence, we imagine that you can evolve things essentially for an infinite amount of time, and there's going to be a Poincaré recurrence somewhere along the way that will make everything bounce back to where it was. So I'm trying to understand to what extent that will require things to jump back again.
This is evaluated on a null surface. So generally speaking, if you have a light-like surface traveling, cutting through the space-time, it'll just pass through the space-time and hit the boundary on order 1 light crossing time. So it's not just going to stick around in the middle of the space-time and keep feeling stuff. If you have you could consider the case of a black hole horizon specifically. Now you asked about regime. We are proposing this sort of at the level of semi-classical physics. We don't necessarily know what we're even talking about if we tried to say in full-blown quantum gravity what we mean by these areas and functional derivatives and so on, obviously. So we it turns out we have now partial proofs of this result in the semi-classical regime. So in order to make sense of this, you need some sort of expansion. And theoretically, you might expect there to be an expansion in h-bar and maybe in these extra parameters alpha. There's a result by Kamano et al. Which suggests that you lose causality in a theory where these alphas are too big. So too big basically means if you have a classical field theory, so that these alphas don't come from quantum corrections, then they showed that if for certain of these terms, like the Gauss-Bonnet term, that if you have a non-zero value, that you can end up having graviton scattering make gravitons go faster than light. And that this is unless the only way they could find to fix it at the classical level was to add a tower of fields with arbitrarily high spin, as occurs in the case of, for example, string theory. So you could simplify the results by saying that you can't have higher curvature corrections of that don't come from stringy corrections or from quantum corrections. If they're much bigger than that, you probably have inconsistencies. So it may make sense to be perturbative in alpha here as well. So this suggests we should maybe focus.
What are they saying? Space-time?
What's the what
is? Did they assume about the,
they assume about the space-time?
Asymptotically flat.
I think they were looking at either asymptotically flat or AD. I think it was asymptotically flat, something like that. But you end up. It's important that there's a boundary so that you can say that there's a well-defined notion of a Shapiro advance, sort of relative to things taking place out near infinity. So that's covariant. Okay. So this gives a reason to perhaps be interested in sort of if you want to stay in the semi-classical regime but still pick up some of these higher order corrections, a good test ground is the adiabatic regime where you have a black hole that is very nearly stationary but not quite, where certain things that might otherwise be inequalities become equalities and give you more information. Okay, so now I want to mention briefly, our arguments that in certain regimes, this quantum focusing conjecture is in fact true. So the first regime the first type of correction I want to discuss is this: are these higher curvature corrections? So we're now at the class. So I want to start with a covariant. Covariant, and for this, I'm going to allow alpha to be finite action. So I'm going to start with a gravitational action that is can depend on the metric, it can depend on Riemann, it can depend on as many derivatives of Riemann as you like, and you can even throw in scalar fields and any number of derivatives of the scalar fields. And it can depend on that with any finite products of those terms. So this is an arbitrary higher curvature scalar tensor theory. Plus,
it's going finite number of derivatives, right?
Presumably. I mean, I don't want to worry about summing things up infinitely or something. If it falls off fast enough, it's presumably OK. But generally speaking, doesn't want to worry about that. Plus a matter action that depends only, is minimally coupled to the metric and involves some matter fields. Now, because I want to put the focus on what changes with the change the gravitational action, I want this to be boring, so it's minimally coupled, and for now it will obey the null energy condition. I want to know whether, if we replace the area with some modified entropy functional, whether we still get a focusing relation. And it turns out you do for any such theory. So the equation of motion of this theory is going to be HAB equals TAB, where HAB is whatever it needs to be. So the null energy condition now tells us that HVV equals TVV is greater than or equal to zero. So we have this thing involving the gravitational action. Now I'm going to assume that the gravitational fields are a first order perturbation to a killing horizon. And I'm only going to be looking at the killing horizon itself, at the perturbed, first order perturbed horizon, to see if this focusing relation is true. My justification for this is that in general, I think in the UV, if you start looking at nonlinear terms in this higher curvature theory, you'd be beyond the regime of validity you'd expect from Kumano et al. For a classical action.
Okay, so you're saying that you're taking your higher curvature theory, looking for stationary black holes, and then perturbing them, and asking to first order, does this quantity decrease?
Or is there an entropy focusing relation? I'm going to prove it by constructing the entropy that obeys it, the focusing relation.
Isn't the entropy given by your formula here?
That formula was proven by Shi Dong in a different context. I'm going to derive it again in a completely different way that just magically happens to agree.
Okay.
for F of Riemann, at least. I'm more general here, and less general than the first order perturbation. So I want to, again, I want to use this coordinate system where I have U and V being the null directions and I and J being transverse. So I want to observe now that on any regular bifurcate killing horizon, the dimension, we can define the weight of a quantity with respect to the killing symmetry by looking at the tensor. If we lower all the indices to be downstairs, the weight with respect to the boost-like thing is the number of v's minus the number of u's. And then, for example, the weight of HVV equals 2. And then it's a fact that any quantity scales on the killing horizon, so on the background, before I do the first order perturbation, it scales like v to the minus w, where v equals 0 is the bifurcation surface, which implies that if w is greater than 0, if it's positive, then it vanishes on the background horizon. So terms with positive weight only appear when you turn on the linearized perturbation. And now, using this fact, you can show that you can just write, so we turn on our perturbation to HVV, so we just look at the second gravitational equation, and in general, we can write this as a sum of terms that are of weight, there are weights like this. So the background has to be negative or zero weight, and the weights have to add to 2, because HVV is of weight 2. So this is minus n, and this is 2 plus n, where n is a natural number. Okay? Now, this implies that you can produce a quantity that satisfies the relationship that if you integrate on the horizon this stress tensor, you get the second derivative with respect to V of some entropy-like quantity. So that's the focusing result you're looking for. In order to prove this, you do it like this. First, you gauge fix the metric So the terms like GVV and GVI are equal to 0. And it's also necessary to set GVV comma U equals to 0. These are all the terms where you have V, you have positive weight that comes not from V derivatives, but just from indices of the V. Once you've fixed this gauge, which is a valid gauge fixing in general relativity in this situation, you can then know that anything of positive weight must have at least that many V derivatives in it. So you look at this thing that's delta Y, and it's got to have at least 2 plus N V derivatives in it. So that means you can repeatedly differentiate it by parts. So differentiation by parts is just like integration by parts, except there's no integral sign. So you have to, so the derivative can either land outside the expression or it can land on the other term. But this term here, because you can't have a background term of positive weight, this term here can absorb at most n derivatives. And there's 2 plus n v derivatives to come out of this term. So when you do this, you always end up with at least 2 v derivatives outside the expression. And you always conclude that there's a focusing relationship where where HDV turns out to be equal to the second derivative of some quantity. This is our focusing relationship. Now, you might, in general, this method means this quantity could depend on both the metric and delta of the metric. You might like to believe that this entropy quantity is a closed or exact whatever is itself the variation of some quantity that depends only on the metric itself, as would happen in the case of the area law. This turns out to be true, and you can prove it, but I don't have time to go into the details. So that you'll have to take on faith. But it turns out that when you construct this entropy by this procedure for F of Riemann gravity, up to a total transverse derivative, which you can get rid of, and up to terms of order k to the fourth, which don't matter, but including terms of k squared, which do matter in general, I got the exact same formula that Shidong did by a completely different method.
And it looks like all you put in here is the Boost symmetry near the bifurcation.
The Boost symmetry and this gauge fixing, which may run into that's why I didn't worry about other tensor fields besides the metric. They'd have to have their own gauge symmetry to do this, but pretty close to it, yeah. And the fact that there's a regular bifurcation surface, yeah. I think it's pretty neat. And now, in the last 5 minutes, I want to discuss these quantum corrections, because we have also considered the case in which you look at quantum corrections and we're asking if this focusing relation is still true, which I erased, but the statement now is that a derivative with respect to V times the 1 over A times the derivative with respect to V of the generalized entropy should be less than or equal 0. So another thing we could do is consider the case where we add, say, free quantum matter fields and ask whether we get a focusing relation of this sort. In order for this not to be dominated by the classical terms, you need to start with a background null surface that is stationary, except for small corrections, kind of like here. And as a result, this 1 over A term ends up dropping out, because that only affects things at quadratic order. Then we can look at the case of field theory, and you can now break up this functional derivative into two types of terms. Because when you take a second derivative, if I push everything up in a second derivative everywhere, that will break into two terms that involve two first derivatives at two different locations, like d by v1 and d by v2 of, because the area term is local, we only have to worry about the s out term for that sort of thing. This, it turns out to be less than or equal to zero. This is strong subadditivity. So now, just these are the, where you call these regions here A, B, and C. It turns out to be the standard strong subadditivity inequality, so it holds automatically just from quantum information theory. The tricky case turns out to be when you, these turn out to be the same guy, so you have, take a second derivative along a single pencil. There you end up with a sort of contact term that makes this guy so what you can do is you can turn this thing into a purely field theoretic statement by replacing the second derivative of the area piece with the stress energy tensor, TVV. And then now you don't need to talk about gravity at all. It's just a fact about the field theory that looks like TV expectation value of TVV is greater than or equal to h bar over 2 pi times a second derivative of the entanglement entropy. So this guy we called the quantum null energy condition because it's like an entanglement entropy corrected version of the null energy condition. We conjecture that this is true for all quantum field theories. People at Berkeley are working on a holographic proof. We proved it. That's this paper. This is the one where we conjectured this focusing inequality. This is the one with this X's and Y's I just went through. This is the paper where we proved it for free field theory, or more generally, for a free or supernormalizable bosonic field. We showed that along each of these generators, if you look at the density matrix, which is like that of the vacuum plus a small correction, we showed you only have to worry about terms that are second order in this correction. And by means of a complicated and brutally non-obvious replica trick calculation, which I do not want to show you and wouldn't want to show you even if I had the whole hour over again, we just derived by a combination of light front quantization and analytic continuations, clever analytic continuations that we owe to Stefan Leichenauer, and a combination of that with brute force, that this is in fact true for every state in the theory.
So is this related to the positivity of the relative entropy?
No, that's the funny thing. The generalized entropy is very closely connected to the relative entropy. It's basically in field theory, it's basically the relative entropy of your state to the vacuum. But the positivity would be the statement that the generalized entropy is, it comes with the other sign. So it says that the generalized entropy is always less than in the vacuum. That's positivity. Monotonicity of the generalized entropy says, of the relative entropy, says that the generalized entropy is increasing, and that is related to the generalized second law. This thing is a second derivative of the relative entropy taking a particular sign in field theory, and that is not one of the standard quantum inequalities that people ever talk about. So one of the things I think is exciting about this is it suggests maybe there's some interesting quantum information theory inequalities grounding this that maybe aren't known yet. And that's all I have to say.
So does this continue to hold even if you choose some weird boundary conditions for the matter fields there, or if you, say, have a gauge theory neglect edge nodes?
Sorry, which result are you pointing?
Sorry, that was a two-part. So I'm asking if the conjecture still holds if you say impose weird boundary conditions to the matter.
Yeah, but which are you talking about, the classical proof or the quantum field theory?
Quantum field theory proof.
The quantum field theory proof. I believe it should still work for Maxwell fields at the level of light front quantization. The weird stuff involving divergences, we're only interested in differences from the vacuum, so I think that doesn't matter. From the perspective of null surface quantization, light front quantization, a Maxwell field on a null surface really looks just like D minus two copies of a scalar field. And you treat it as exactly the same, but there's polarization vector along for the ride. For fermions, presumably there's an analog of our calculation that would do the same thing, but we didn't figure out where you have to put in all the minus signs. So, and you also asked about boundary conditions. Where would you put the boundary condition?
On the horizon.
On this, so it's important that the, I think it's important that the horizon, that you can freely specify data on the horizon, that we're talking about a standard horizon that's not really a boundary.
All right. And would you need to increase the edge nodes if you're doing Maxwell theory in the bulk?
Well, in principle, you should. It doesn't show up. It's not quite obvious how it shows up in light front quantization. Are there other questions? Well, you asked them all during the time. All right, thank you very much.